You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Chambéry.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Francois Thomasot.
Hello, Richard.
Hello. What a day. Where do we start today on the tour?
I'm not entirely sure. Perhaps we should just say where we are.
Where do we start, Lionel? Well, where are we, Lionel?
Well, we're in Chambéry, where the first phase of the Tour de France has ended. I don't want to upset if Daniel's listening. This is still the last climb, the Mont du Chat. Is in the Jura still, but I think Chambéry is in the Alps, no?
Oh, yeah, that's the Alps, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's in Savoy. It used to be the capital of Savoy. It was, it belonged to the kingdom of Piedmont, Sardinia in the Middle Ages, and it's absolutely alpine.
Well, we're not going any deeper into the Alps, are we? Because the whole race is transferring over to the sort of midwest of France, to the Dordogne, where the rest day will be. We've got to drive over there, do a bit of it tonight, and then the rest of it tomorrow morning. And, today is one of those days on the Tour de France that has completely scrambled my mind. But I will do my best to try and sum up what happened on stage 9. Correct myself there, because I've actually written down stage 8, but that was yesterday. So that gives you an indication of how confusing it has been, really. The stage was from Nantua to Chambéry. It was 181.5 kilometres with 7 climbs, including the all-category climbs of the Col de la Biche, the Grand Colombier and the Mont du Chat. The headline news is that Richie Porte, who was one of the pre-race favourites, crashed out very heavily on the descent of the Mont du Chat. We'll talk about that crash in a little while, but he came off pretty badly, and we're all very grateful, really, and thankful that he was talking to the doctors as he was being treated. He's been taken to hospital. His Tour de France obviously over, and it was one of those crashes that causes everyone watching to kind of pause and kind of try to put into context how much the rest of the race really means. But that's the inexorable thing about the Tour de France, is it carries on. And it's been a day of drama in every sense, really, because not only did Porte crash out, but earlier on the road, the second place rider overall, Geraint Thomas for Team Sky, crashed out. He's broken his collarbone. That's the second Grand Tour of the year that he's crashed out of. Not only that, but Robert Hesink of Team Lotto NL Jumbo crashed on the first climb of the day. He's out of the race as well. What else happened? On the Mont du Chat, Chris Froome had a mechanical, and at precisely that moment, Fabio Aru attacked. We'll talk all about that in the second part of the podcast. The group slowed down to let Chris Froome get back on. Then there was a video emerged of Chris Froome apparently veering towards Aru, forcing the Italian champion over to the edge of the road. The race itself, well, Warren Barguil was sensational and arguably deserved to win, because he was out in front all day. He was over the top of the Grand Colombier on his own, over the top of the Mont du Chat on his own. He was only caught by Romain Bardet at the bottom of the descent as they headed towards Chambéry. Bardet went past him, powered on alone, and Barguil had the strength to settle into that group with the likes of Froome and Rigoberto Urán, crucially. Bardet was caught by that group with 2 kilometres to go. Urán, the Colombian rider with the Cannondale Drapac team, he damaged his bike in the crash earlier on the descent and only had 2 gears to choose from, the 36-11, which is obviously very spinny, and the 53-11, which is a real huge sprinter's gear. So he needed a long, hard sprint, which he got, because Jakob Fuglsang opened it up very early. Urán and Barguil hit the line together. It wasn't quite as close as the Kittel Bösenhagen sprint a couple of days ago, but not far off that. Funnily enough, Barguil beat Urán in a photo finish at Formigal in the Vuelta in 2013. This time the result went the other way. Urán wins for Cannondale Drapac. Nearly there.
You can go for a line down in a minute, Lionel.
There's so much more to talk about. I mean, overall, there has been a real shake-up. We're now down really to, how many is it, 4 riders. Chris Froome still in the yellow jersey. Fabio Aru at 18 seconds. Romain Bardet at 51. Rigoberto Urán at 55. Marcel Kittel still in green. Barguil has the polka dots. Simon Yates is in white. Arnaud Démare, stage winner at Vittel, is out along with 3 of his FDJ teammates. So a day when really, I mean, I've missed so much out, but that's the crucial stuff, I think.
Whew. Wow.
What to say?
What to say? We're going to talk about the polemica with with Chris Froome and Fabio Aru in part two. And in part three, we're gonna focus a bit on Rigoberto Urán and hear from some people on the Cannondale Drapac team. So, part one, we want to start on a pretty somber note by just discussing the awful crash for Richie Porte, the awful crash for Geraint Thomas. I mean, Geraint Thomas has had so much bad luck, and as you say, Lionel, it's almost forgotten he was sitting second overall at the start of the day, riding well.
And it was forgotten that he crashed yesterday. I mean, without being flippant, you know, Geraint Thomas does crash a fair bit. We didn't mention it even yesterday. He and Froome both misjudged that corner. Thomas actually hit the deck yesterday. He hit the deck much more seriously today. Real bad luck for him. The end of his tour, a bad collarbone break, but... You know, I mean, you can't grade these injuries in terms of severity and, you know, and say, well, he got away lightly because he's got a nasty bone break. But compared to the Porte crash, Richie Porte's crash was a real shocker. One of those ones, like I say, where everyone sort of holds their breath a little bit. And
a bit like Annemiek van Vleuten in the Olympic road race, when you watch it and it's sickening and you don't want to see it again, and the TV channels inevitably play it again. People are tweeting it inappropriate when... You fear that it might be really bad, and you want to know that the person's okay. And on this occasion, as you say, the initial reports are he will be okay. But it's awful. I mean, it's terrible for anybody to suffer that bad luck and that type of injury and an awful, horrendous crash. But Richie Porte, as we just seen, was one of the main challenges in this race as well.
My impression is that cycling is changing and crashes are now part of cycling. And I know it's, you know, it's easy to say here, you know, in this room, but really in the last 30, 40 years, we all had the impression that the Tour de France was won in the mountains, but going up, more and more cycling races are won going down, and downhills play a very, very important role these days. In the old days, you had guys like, I don't know, Frédéric Vichot, or you had guys like Nibali, even these days, and you say, they were the, you know, the oddities, the guys who could go down well. But these days, actually, it's crucial that you can, you know, that you're a very skillful rider going downhill. And as we saw last year on the tour already, with Froome and you know, his strange attitude going downhill. As we saw again today, there was actually no difference made in the climbs. The differences were made, you know, going down. And once again, we knew from the start of the tour, with the course we had, with very few mountaintop finishes, that the downhills and the descents would be the key. And maybe some of the GC riders should really work hard on their skills going downhill, because it's crucial. You mentioned Geraint Thomas. He crashed at the Olympics when he was on his way to maybe a medal. He crashed again in the Giro. He crashes again in the Tour de France. You can call it bad luck, or you can say that maybe it's a specific approach to cycling that he needs to work on.
It's weird because Geraint Thomas, you know, grew up riding the track, riding the Madison. He's a very good bike handler. He was he's been a fantastic lead out man for people. A lot of his crashes are just bad luck. I mean, at the Giro, it was just pure bad luck. You know, but going right back to when he was riding for the British Academy, you know, he suffered a terrible crash when he was in training in Australia, had his spleen removed. You know, he's just, some of the crashes, no doubt, duo today hit, I think, Rafał Majka. I think Majka fell in front of him. You know, you can't blame him for that. It's just, there was an occasion a couple of years ago when Warren Barguil, of all people, took him off the road on the Sagan to Gap. He does suffer a lot of bad luck.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult balance in this. You know, I'm covering a lot of alpine skiing in the winter season, so I'm used to guys stumbling down slopes and the good skiers tell you that to go down a slope like that, the right balance is very important. And Bodie Miller is an American skier and probably the most skilled skier of the last decade, used to say, being a good alpine skier is to go to the limit but never above it. And I'm not saying these guys are going over the limit, but maybe sometimes when it gets very tense. But Froome put the pressure on them today in the descent, actually, and that's when Richie crashed, because when you're tense, that someone is going downhill very quickly, maybe sometimes you go over your limits and you try to push behind these guys, and there you are. It's too fast for you. You lose your balance, you lose your mind from time to time, and crashes occur. Okay, luck is part part of it, but it's not. I don't think that's a major point.
But let's not forget that the conditions played a part as well today. I mean, it wasn't heavy rain at any point. It was just drizzly. The part where Richie Port crashed was tree covered. The surface was one of those. It looked like it had been resurfaced not too long ago. There was that bit of gravel on the left hand side as the road just slightly curved round. He ran off the road onto that, and that's what then kicked him across the road. An awful impact into Dan Martin, who also went down. And then Port hit the rocky wall on the other side of the road really hard. I mean, let's just hear from Dan Martin, the
Quickstep
rider.
Well, shall we hear from, first of all, from Fabio Baldato, Port's sports director, who was also first on the scene, I think. Let's hear from Baldato, and then we'll hear from Dan Martin.
I can only say it was caution from the beginning. When we arrived, was things 1 minute and a half, 2 minutes, because it was a little bit behind with the car. I was looking, my eyes, I was looking at him. He have a pain, shoulder. But yeah, we need to wait the doctor. What was important, he was always cautioned, you know what happened, and he was asking for his helmet, his glasses. That is the only thing that I can say.
Fabio, there was a lot of talk about this descent before the race. In your opinion, was it too dangerous for a Tour de France?
Yeah, we know before. We did four times before the race. We did on training, we did on race. We know it was dangerous one, but that, yeah, I cannot say anything else. We are all sad. We did a lot of work. First, Richie did a lot of work for this Tour de France from the beginning of the year. We did a lot of training, recon, training camp. Also with teammates that they are here, we did everything was possible to put him on the podium. From the first day, all the team was around him. For sure, we are sad. We just can be next to Richie and wait him as soon as possible to come back stronger, because, yeah, he deserve a good result, a great Tour de France. This year was super good. But then we wait him soon and stronger.
Richie just lost his wheel going into the corner, you know. We were fifth or sixth position in the group, following the others, and he was just so slippery under the trees. His back wheel hit some gravel or something, and his back wheel slid. He went straight on into the grass on a right-hander, and then he just came straight across the road and hit the wall on the right and just collected me, you know. I didn't know anywhere to go. I think I'm okay, actually, remarkably. I seem to have bounced pretty well. I mean, there's somebody looking after me today, for sure. The front wheel was broken, so I had to get a wheel off Navic, and then I didn't have any brakes going into the next corner, so I crashed again. I just went straight on into the wall, because I was just like, literally just didn't have any brakes, so it was, luckily the team car caught up with me then, and I managed to get my spare bike, and managed to catch back onto that group I was with in the end, and we just rode a team time, so I was finished.
I also spoke to the doctor who was on the scene and just got her perspective on what happened, and you know, her first thought is the rider able to communicate? Is the rider able to move a little bit, you know, make sure that nothing is broken? Obviously, head injuries and his neck were the first concern because of how hard he'd hit the wall. But, I mean, spare a thought for those medics, because, you know, I see on Twitter people saying, oh, the cars have all parked in a bad position. Yes, obviously, they're pulling off to treat Richie Port. The ambulance has to come along. The rest of the race is going past. And, yes, they send somebody up the road to sort of, you know, wave arms and what have you to warn that there's an obstacle in the road, but there's very little they can do, and they're working in incredibly hazardous conditions. It's one of those things where you wonder, Francois, with the way cycling is changing, and particularly with the route, and everyone was talking about this descent. It wasn't a surprise. Everyone knows it's difficult,
tricky. Well, as we heard there from Baldato, they wreck it at four times.
Of course. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you know, the question has to be asked, are the riders being pushed in the wrong direction by the race? And you know, descending has always been a key skill, but it's always, you know, back in the day, it's always been the bit where the TV broadcasters take their ad breaks, because the idea is they all just get down as safely as possible in more or less the same order that they go over the top. That is not the case anymore, is it?
I remember in the 80s, you had the climbs in the Indurain days. I mean, descents were never an issue, you know. You had the climb, and then even the Tourmalet climb, which the descent, which is sometimes very tricky as well. It was never an issue. Nobody attacked. You must go back to the 70s and you know, reckless riders like Luis Ocaña, or from time to time Anquetil when he had a little bit of champagne, to have, you know, this kind of reckless attacks in the descents. But in the 80s, 90s and early 21st century, it had gone out of fashion. Maybe there's also, you know, but as you say, it's part of cycling. We're talking about Nibali. He's noted as a great, you know, downhill rider. He never crashes. He takes lots of risks.
Olympic road race.
Yeah, I sure, offer. But everybody Olympic crashed, road race. Everybody crashed that day, you know. But once again, I mean, it's probably part of cycling these days. It makes it more exciting in many ways. We've been very often talking on a cycling podcast about varying formats and really to make descents, you know, a part of it. Was exciting, you know, as hell last year when we saw Chris Froome go downhill the way he did. So it is part. It is what makes cycling exciting these days. And well, once again, I think teams, riders, everybody involved should be prepared to make now, you know, downhill riding. I was about to say skiing, but riding a key, you know, a key discipline in which they should work.
That's certainly true. I mean, we overlooked almost a couple of team performances today. Sunweb and also AG2R. They really both had clearly had plans. They put Barguil in the polka dot jersey. He very nearly got the stage win as well. They had five riders up in that move. AG2R as well, lots of riders up in the move and very aggressive behind. Roman Bardet got away on the descent. There was a little bit too far between the descent and the finish for him to stay away, but impressive.
Well, that would be my point about the course, is the gap between the bottom of the descent when it levelled out and then into town here really was too far. It made the riders push themselves and take risks.
But
for
what if the finish had been closer to the bottom of the descent, they'd have taken fewer risks.
No, but I'm talking about the you know, the point of pushing the risks. Sure. You know, it's a sort of a small point, a subtle point, but risking all of that, really the only gains were made by crashes, really, weren't they? The fact that Richie Porte is now out of the tour, the fact that Dan Martin lost a minute and 15 because he came off, and then
which is amazing,
and also, you know, the fact he got back on his bike, he had no brakes because he'd taken a Mavic wheel. You know, he crashed on the next corner because he couldn't stop.
Yeah,
I mean, these risks, I'm, you know, I don't want to sound too soft about this, but some of these risks feel to me like they're just going too far, and I know that that's coloured by the awful images of Richie Porte crashing. And again, it's back to almost the Peter Sagan argument. You know, the consequences make you reassess the circumstances, I
guess.
That's
right, but once again, like in alpine skiing, you don't have to take these risks. I mean, you know, to be the good descent rider, I think, or the good downhill rider, is like the good downhill skier or the good any type of sportsman, is to go to the limit and not go beyond it. And sometimes when you crash, it's exactly what you're doing. You should know what you're doing. Some guys don't go that fast. Some guys wait a little bit, you know, in the descent, take it easy, and then go on the flat and make up for lost time. There are various ways to handle these descents. On Paris-Nice, every year, the last stage in the hills around Nice is full of up and downs, very tricky downhills. It's part of the sport, I think. And once again, I mean, it's what happened to Richie Porte is horrendous, and you know, it seems a little bit strange to discuss cycling tactics when you have a crash like this one. But once again, in the same time, everybody knew that the descent of Mont du Chat was a tricky one. About your point that probably the finish was too far, you know that when a course is designed, there are different priorities. One is to have it as much as possible in the center of town, and the center of Chambéry is unfortunately that far from the top of Mont du Chat.
Unfortunately, we can't redesign the way the earth is made.
That's right.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004.
Look who it is.
It's Ciro Scognamiglio.
By popular request.
thank you, listeners. We are so not really far from Italy, but unfortunately far from the beach. But let's go ahead.
We haven't seen you much since Dusseldorf, Ciro, when you joined us in Dusseldorf for our live event, which was very enjoyable.
Yes, Richard, because as I told you already in Dusseldorf, two less beaches is in this tour. And so this tour is for me really a really tough experience. So thanks godness that podcast still exists. So
still, we've carried on somehow without you. I don't know. We've stumbled on and we've made it. We're a week into the tour, Ciro. And one of the talking points today was your countryman, the antics of your countryman, Fabio Aru. You must have spoken to him after the stage. Did he know that Chris Froome had a mechanical when he attacked?
He said not. And I was thinking about this because also I had the possibility to speak to Froome after the stage. And so Froome said that he didn't see Fabio Aru attack. So the moral is Fabio Aru didn't see the mechanical problem on Froome. Froome didn't see the attack of Aru. So as a matter of fact, joking for sure, we could do an article or a talk about the blindness of cycling because today nobody
Did Froome lift up his arm? Did Aru think that Froome was lifting up his arm to let him ride under, like making a tunnel, like
maybe,
you do with kids sometimes?
Who knows? It's really difficult.
It's a bit
sometimes.
Like, you know, Putin told Trump that he didn't, that the Russians didn't try and hack the American election. It's a similar yeah. thing. So to global politics.
Do we believe this? Do we believe Aru? Do we believe Froome?
Normally, for me, especially after the race, in official talks. Sometimes cyclists are not really, they don't really say the truth. I mean, they prefer to be more politically correct and not going deep the things.
Ciro, apart from that, Fabio Aru obviously attacked that he didn't persist with that attack because the other riders persuaded him not to. No. How is he? Because he did seem to struggle a little bit after that. Did he have a good day today or not such a good day?
My opinion, a medium day, we have also to consider that the stage was really different from La Planche des Belles Filles. In La Planche des Belles Filles, the only steep climb was the last one. Maybe today the riders did the most important stage of the tour, almost 5,000 meters of elevation. And so, I mean, maybe it was not so strong as last Wednesday, but as a matter of fact, now it's a second in the over, and I think that he would have signed before the start of the tour to arrive in this situation at the first rest day.
That's what it looked like, that he and Fuglsang were chasing down Bardet almost to protect Aru's position rather than to try and dislodge Chris Froome, because they were effectively helping Chris Froome there.
Yes, exactly. I mean, also tactical is not really very clear in Astana this today. Also, if I spoke even if I spoke to Martinelli after the stage, and then that he said that Fuglsang helped Aru in the final and he tried to win the stage, and Aru remains the clear captain, but for them it's important also to have a Fuglsang in the overall. In this way he could be a key man, a tactical weapon for the Astana. And the listeners, I'm really sad that I have to already leave you, but I have also a problem. I have to write I don't know how many articles, 300 Ks to do by car tonight, and maybe my laptop is broken. So, I mean, I have to check because otherwise it's a mess.
Oh, dear.
He's running. Look, off he runs. We're hijacked a little bit there by Ciro Scognamiglio from Gazzetta dello Sport. But, you know, we can...
Always a pleasure.
Happy to be hijacked by Ciro. Yeah. Just before that, we heard a message from our main sponsor, Rafa. Thank you very much indeed to Rafa. A reminder that throughout the month they are celebrating climbing. Hashtag Rafa Rising. Go on the website, see lots of stuff about climbing, not descending thankfully, but climbing. But we are going to talk in this part about what we've just been chatting about with Ciro, which is the little tiff or the little misunderstanding or the what went on. I mean we are kind of bracing ourselves here and building ourselves up here, Lionel, for Francois's catchphrase, I think.
Well,
maybe we're anticipating what you made of it all, Francois. I mean, okay, let's put it like this.
You know, I've been refraining and restraining from using the catchphrase.
Okay, we're talking about Froome. His arm goes up.
Yeah,
Aru attacks.
Yeah,
okay, Aru attacks. The riders go with him. Richie Porte and others urge him to slow down. He slows down and they wait for Froome to get back on. What do you make of that?
So far, so good. I have no problem with that.
Oh.
I have no problem because, I mean, it's a debate that's been going on forever. remember Schleck, Contador,
Armstrong, Tourmalet. 2003.
I mean, what do you do when a rider as a mechanical is some? Why should the yellow jersey holder have the privilege of being waited for when he has a mechanical, and all the other riders they have a mechanical? Well, I'm sorry, mate, but you've lost the race. I don't see any. But personally, I think that mechanicals are part of the race, and if the yellow jersey or any other riders. Rider as a mechanical, too bad, you know, that's part of the race, and there's no problem with attacking or going away, and once
listen
again,
I agree
if,
with
if Aru had a mechanical, do you think they would have waited for
him? I agree completely with the unwritten rule as it applies to yellow jersey. Wait for the yellow jersey if Lionel, hold on a second, if it happens, yeah, if it's a p-stop or a puncture or a crash or anything that happens at any point in the race other than close to the summit of the final climb of the race.
Yeah,
you
but
know, it's
Aru said,
is on.
Aru said, possibly rightly, he said, I had always planned to attack at that very moment.
He would
moment.
Say that, wouldn't he?
You know, that's the point.
Did he always plan to go under Froome's arm like that as well?
Once again, the debate we've had many times, my opinion is that you shouldn't wait for the yellow jersey. Others will think that, okay, you know, that's this unwritten rule that we should wait for the yellow jersey. I mean, it's an endless debate, and we will never settle the issue. But the real bullshit, because that's what you want me to say, happened afterwards when, you know, at the end of the race, Aru was asked, oh, "What do you think? What do you make of it?" He said, "Oh, really? Oh, I didn't see that Froome had a mechanical." And then Froome afterwards was asked, "Oh, what did you think of Aru's move?" And he said, "Oh, Aru's move? I didn't know Aru had moved." And then Richie Port, we saw it, you know, talked to the riders and said, "Oh, please don't move. My friend Chris is in trouble," you know. What is it? The Tour de France, or is it the United Nations?
Their
and
job.
Everybody's, you know, the yeah. diplomacy. That sort of, you know, that sort of, how could I say, yeah, game of lies. You know, that sort of diplomacy that's full of, once again,
their bullshit. Their job is not to protect the yellow jersey, to get the yellow jersey off him.
Yeah, I mean, this whole business has gone out of control. The spirit of, correct me if I'm wrong, Francois, you've been following cycling a lot longer than I have, but the spirit of this don't attack the yellow jersey when they're in difficulty, kind of, it's grown out of all proportion. But the idea was, in unusual circumstances, in a kind of, you know, on a flat bit of road, don't, if they're just going along and the yellow jersey hits a wheel and goes down, don't then hammer it hell for leather. But when the race is actually in the most critical phase, this is part and parcel of, you know, what it takes to win a Tour de France. You have to be good, you have to be strong, you have to be clever, you have to be lucky. And if you have a mechanical problem on the Mont du Chat with 5 kilometres to go to the top, tough luck.
Yes, can you imagine in a sprint finish that, you know, Peter Sagan or whoever, you know, had a problem with the pedals or something, and do we rerun the sprint? You know?
Exactly.
No,
but then, the things got even more contentious, because when Chris Froome did get back up to the GC group, they were going around a corner, and a lot of people missed this. A friend of mine screen grabbed it, videoed it on his rewindable television. I felt a little guilty, because it's one of these things where an image leads to a conclusion, but doesn't, you know, give a, you know, doesn't prove that there's a case to answer. But it was certainly an interesting move when Froome came round that gentle right-hand bend and just appears to nudge and lean Fabio Aru right over to the edge of the road. Now, Chris Froome in the press conference this evening, they came in. There's a big transfer to do tonight, so they've got a plane to catch. So the announcement was made. 3 questions, please. The first question was about that incident, and he said, "Oh, as you said, Francois, oh, I didn't see Aru attack. Oh, I didn't mean, you know, I just wobbled as I went round the corner. It was nothing intentional." Okay, fine. Then a French journalist asked the same question in French, presumably not having understood that the first question was exactly the same. So Froome said, "Oh, I've already answered that question. You'll get the translation afterwards." The French journalist then, not understanding, perhaps, he then asked the same question again. Chris Froome decided that was the 3 questions, and he got up and left the press conference.
That's right. That's why I used my catchphrase on this, because they all say, "Aru, oh no, I didn't know. Are we all good friends? You know, it's a fair game, and we're all in a gentleman's club, and blah blah blah." But actually, the way Chris Froome reacted to 3 questions on the subject showed that actually the spirits are not as tame and gentle as they seem.
Yeah, I approached Dave Brailsford at the finish probably a bit unfairly. I offered to show him a video of the incident on my phone. Probably not realistic to expect him to comment on the basis of a 7 to 8 second video on a mobile phone. But I did ask the question, would you expect the jury to take a second look at that? He didn't want to answer that question.
If you remember, Froome was punished last year for hitting a spectator on Super Bagnaia, was it, before the descent into Luchon? Perisord, sorry.
That's right. Yes, it was. That,
he hit a spectator, didn't he? And I think he was fined some money.
But given the Peter Sagan incident, initially the punishment was a 30-second penalty and relegation to last on the stage. You could have anticipated a similar sort of penalty for a deliberate leaning into another rider. Forget the fact that it's a lot slower incident, and there was obviously no terrible consequences in the sense that it didn't injure another rider. But I mean, this is the precedent that was set 3-4 whatever days ago.
So obviously there is an unwritten rule in the peloton that you shouldn't attack the maillot jaune in this type of condition. But there's also obviously an unwritten rule with the race jury not to sanction the yellow jersey older one. You would have sanctioned maybe another rider.
One suspects that a lot of riders would sympathise in this scenario with Chris Froome.
I was
in a group speaking to George Bennett, the Kiwi rider. Actually very worth mentioning George Bennett, because a young New Zealander is up to 10th overall, rode extremely well today, finished 7th on the stage. He's an interesting guy. Hoping to speak to him more later this week. But he was very critical of Aru for attacking, and he was asked whether he saw Froome. Let's hear what he says, actually. Let's hear what he said when he was asked by our colleague Kelly Fretz whether he'd seen Froome. Give Aru a little nudge.
I did, actually. Good on you, Froomey. Fuck. He's lucky you got away with that. I hope everybody's entertained after that. We had a bike race. That's what we wanted. And I mean, I actually say that was... all the bad shit that happened, we're focusing on that, but actually that was a beautiful bike race, and I was happy to be part of it. Happy I had legs to be part of it, not just suffer out the back.
So that was George Bennett. He did see Froome give the nudge. So, there's something going on here, and in the run-in into town, when Bardet was away having attacked, there seemed to be an understanding in the group behind, which contained Fuglsang, Froome...
Aru.
Uran, exactly. There was Barguil, but Barguil was a passenger. But the others were working to bring Bardet back, because Bardet was a threat, obviously, to Froome, but also to Aru. And it was almost like there was some kind of agreement made there that the two Astana riders would help bring back Bardet. They've got their own interests to protect there. But the point there is they're protecting Aru's place on the podium rather than putting Froome under real pressure.
Yeah, I don't know about that, because my opinion is that if Aru had been in the front, probably AG2R would have worked with Sky as well. I think...
Because they're all protecting their place on the podium.
Yeah, exactly. My impression is that we now have more or less the top five is kind of settled. The top three could well be the same. I mean, it wouldn't be totally logical to think that Froome, Aru and Bardet could be on the podium in Paris, and my impression is we might have from now on kind of alliances of two between one but it will vary according to the race situation. But my impression is that that's probably what we're going to see.
Well, we do see a lot of this where riders will protect their position, and we'll see more and more of that as the race goes deeper and deeper, because of course as you get 2 weeks in, an awful lot of work has gone into trying to get a place on the podium, and the gaps tend to open up, and so the chances of actually winning become less realistic. I had a wacky idea yesterday, didn't I, about what the Tour de France could do. Being the sort of the biggest stage race in the world, it does stand at least half a step above the Giro and the Vuelta, and to try and change the way the race is contested, maybe they could just say there are no World Tour points for anyone except the winner and the stage winners, and there is no prize money for anyone except the winner and the stage winners, and so therefore it really is a case of winner takes all. You might see a slight change. I'm not sure.
I always love Lionel's reforms of cycling. It's always very
future UCI president.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's always clever. You know, it's always unusual. It's always different. But for some reason,
it's also
I don't
bullshit.
Know why. Yeah, for some reason, I don't know why. I don't think they will come into fruition at any stage. But why not? Yeah, no, it's true that we've had this problem in the past. But to me, it's more the mentality of teams that's a problem than the race itself. Why? Should these teams, like, I mean, we've seen Movistar many, many times, you know, being content with the podium placing.
Well, it's the points, isn't it, really? They are looking to try and finish as high up the World Tour rankings as they can, and there's an awful lot of points on offer.
There was a stage in the history of the UCI that they dropped, actually, the UCI points, precisely for this reason. And also because at the time they thought it might encourage doping, because, you know, to get more UCI points, well, you might be tempted to take stuff. So it's also been a very old and long debate. I wouldn't be against it. I don't really see the point of the points, to be honest.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science and Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. And just after their message, we heard there some of the Colombian fans outside the Cannondale Drapac bus, obviously waiting for, well, it was just after Rigoberto Urán arrived back.
I mean, they're real fair weather, aren't they? I mean, this morning they were supporting Quintana.
That was what Charlie Wiglia said. Charlie Wiglia said to me, he said, are these Quintana's guys? They just swap buses. We haven't mentioned. I don't think we mentioned Quintana, but a bad day for him.
Well, and we'll do a wrap up of the
Alberto
GC Contador. Riders, yeah.
But let's. I mean, I think Warren Barguil would have been a very deserving winner, but I think Urán was also a popular winner.
Well, I mean, Barguil, you have to feel for him. He rode incredibly hard yesterday. When they got caught on the final climb up to Station de Rousse, he then soft pedaled in and lost, I think, 9 minutes in. Probably less than that number of kilometres, so really tried to save his legs for today. Was off on the attack again right at the start, really, and was sensational. I mean, looks great on a bike, climbs so well, descends well. It was quite heartbreaking when he got caught the first time, and then when you saw him contesting the sprint, coming down the outside as he was, I mean, I was, you know...
It was even more heartbreaking when you saw him being dragged away from the winner's interviews in tears when he was told, initially he was declared the winner and then he was told actually Urán had it.
But Urán's story also is...
Now Lionel's in tears.
Yeah, the thing is, well, to be honest, I mean, I'm a great fan of Barguil and he's a great rider and to me a real... great potential to be a major GC rider in the future, probably the most gifted of the new French generation. He had his we're talking of crashes in the first part of this cycling podcast. He actually struggled these last couple of seasons with crashes. He was, you know, he was involved in this incident with the team Sunweb when he got run into by a by an old lady driving a car in Spain, and at the Tour de Romandie this year, he had another horrendous crash, and he's, you know, it looked very unlikely he would be at the Tour, and he was. But then again, when the final bunch had finally decided, and you had this group of riders with Froome, Bardet, Urán, Barguil. Urán was the obvious winner because, I mean, he likes this type of finish. He was the best sprinter of the lot. I've seen him done many, many races of this kind. It seemed the right choice. And when we saw Barguil sprinting and nearly, making up for, matching Urán's abilities in a sprint like that, it was really, really astonishing.
Well, our friend and colleague Julien Preteau spoke to the Cannondale Drapac boss this morning, Jonathan Vaughters, who arrived on the race yesterday in wine country. Should we hear what he said?
I think Bardet is going to go fast as fuck on the last descent. How's that? I mean, the general idea is we're going to try to win the stage. I mean, put the priority on winning the stage over any sort of general classification. I mean, we're a team more set up for that than GC anyway. So, you know, we'll try to put as many riders as we can in the breakaway and see what happens. I think Rigo's good. Yeah, Rigo's fucking good, man. He's like the guy nobody talks about. It's like the man whose name cannot be mentioned. Fucking Voldemort.
That was Jonathan Votters, or Nostradamus, who is somebody we've been talking about the last couple of days. But very very accurate stuff there. I mean, Uran was one of their marquee signings last year, wasn't he, along with Pierre Rolland. Taken now, he's got a tour stage win with Uran, a Giro stage win with Rolland. Those guys are starting to deliver the goods for them, for that team, a team that's struggled a lot but is on a bit of a roll at the moment. And I think you spoke to Charlie Bagelius, didn't you, the sports director?
I did, yeah. And he was, I suppose, understandably, a bit downbeat despite the personal joy of winning for the team. Everybody's minds at the finish was really on Richie Porte and I guess other riders who crashed. But here is Charlie's assessment of the stage win. And of course, Uran was stuck in that one gear. So we had this almost comical scene in the run into the finish where, you know, Chris Froome was twiddling away on a slight rise and Rigoberto Uran looked like he was riding a sort of postman's bike, didn't he, in a huge gear. But in the end, that probably paid off. And I started by sort of half joking that maybe the Tour should return to the days of the single speed bike.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, could have done without that, but big win. I mean, I really hope that Richie's going to be in good shape, because it's such a shame again to be, you know, worrying about another member of the peloton. So I really hope he's going to be okay.
It's very difficult, isn't it? Because the race is a day of 100 stories, and of course Richie Porte's crash is the most serious incident that's happened out there. And yet the Tour goes on, and you come down to the finishing straight there, and you're kind of conflicted. You must still have been thinking, well, we've got a chance to win here.
Yeah, we didn't have any information coming, you know, during the race about him. So it was only when we came to the line when we heard that he'd been taken away in the ambulance. So I hope he comes out okay.
But aside from that, a great finish for Uran, and you know, a finish that really suited him from the results we've seen in the past, but perhaps not ideal to only have one gear to choose from.
No, I mean, it took us a while to get there with the car, because we were behind the group of Quintana, and there was a lot of people there, and then when we got there, you know, it just wasn't feasible to fix it at that stage of the race, so we had to go like that. And typically of Rigoberto, he didn't let that fluster him, and he just went straight ahead and did the sprint anyway, and he did it exactly as you should have done, and he really deserved the win, I have to say.
And because he was in that big gear, maybe Vogelsang going so long possibly helped him out, because it gave him something to get in behind and a bit more of a long run at it.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, as soon as we knew that was the situation, we said that he had to do a long sprint. Luckily, somebody else did one too, so the pace was high. If it would have been a cat and mouse situation and a sprint from a standstill, I think he would have been entirely eliminated from the reckoning.
Well, at the Cannondale Drapac bus, Lionel, amid jubilant scenes with the Renta Colombian crowd who switched their allegiances to the Cannondale Drapac team, I spoke to Rigoberto Uran's roommate, Alberto Bettiol, the Italian rider. He misunderstood my last question, actually, but never mind. Here is Alberto Bettiol.
I understand you're sharing a room with Rigoberto.
Yeah, I have this privilege.
What's he like as a roommate?
Ah, he's so tranquilo, he's so easy, he's just a simple guy. And
Where did you hear? Where were you when you heard he won the stage?
I was just 5K to the finish, and I went to the PIVA, the sport director of BMC, and I just he just said that Rigo won. I said, incredible, because I didn't knew anything in the race, because we were so far and I didn't hear from the radio. So, but I mean, I saw him every day, and he said to me I'm in good shape. But he surprised me. I know that it's gonna be something special in this Tour. But win today with all these crashes, he's also a good bike rider. So I think from now on it's gonna be another Tour for us and for him.
He'll still be calm as a roommate, you think, after this?
Yeah, for sure. He wants me. He won't win without me, for sure.
Yeah, I think Bettiol was suggesting there that Rigoberto Urán might be moved into a different room now that he's won a stage, but that's not what I meant. He's up to fourth place overall, which, as Bettiol told us there, changes their tour quite significantly.
Especially as he has pedigree, twice second in the Giro d'Italia. You know, his Tour de France have been sort of okay, but he's never been, you know, really right up there overall. But when you look at the rest of the course, what has he got to negotiate, really? I mean, yes, there's a tough stage in the Pyrenees, and then it's all on the Izoard and the time trial. And we know he is a good time trialist. And so, yeah, as Francois says, you know, that top four... you know, barring crashes and what have you, that does look like the four riders that are going to contest for the yellow jersey. And you wouldn't rule Urán out there from finishing on the podium. I mean, he's only 4 seconds off it at the moment.
And I think that Jonathan Vaughter's remarks this morning actually prove, in many ways, how cunning he is and how cunning the Canon del Drapac strategy has been for the past couple of seasons. They try to pretend they're like a low-key, maybe, you know, second division team. But when you look at the lineup, I mean, they're far from the second division team. And we have tended to forget that Rigoberto Urán could win a Grand Tour, that Pierre Roland could win major stages, even if he was not so, you know, good today. And look at their lineup. Andrew Talensky, I mean, we completely forgot about him, but he's also got potential. It's actually quite an impressive team. So, I mean, their low-key approach, actually proved very cunning.
Talensky looked shell-shocked when he arrived back at the bus and was told that, I mean, he already knew, but he just couldn't quite compute, I think. Interesting, because they sort of came in as, if they had GC hopes, it was with Talensky and Urán figuring out as the race went on who would be best placed. Now it's clearly Urán. Talensky's going to have to work for him. We'll see how that goes down. Urán also seems to have been around forever. He's still only 30.
Mm. Amazing, really, isn't it? And
someone who looks quite like Mick Jagger. He maybe looks a bit older than 30, but he is still only 30, so should be in his prime.
Well, Rich, you mentioned a few of the other winners and losers of today. I mean, the people who impressed me, you've already mentioned George Bennett, seventh place on the stage, moves up to 10th overall. Simon Yates defended his position in the white jersey, and that competition's looking pretty good for him because he's got at least 3 minutes or almost 3 minutes over Louis Menkes. Pierre Latour is quite a bit further down, and Emmanuel Buchmann is good 5 minutes down. So Simon Yates could well emulate his brother Adam, who of course won the white jersey last year. Not a great day for Nairo Quintana, clearly showing the effects of having already raced a very hard, very intense Giro. Not a good day for Rafał Majka, who was in the Geraint Thomas crash and lost half an hour. Not a good day for Alberto Contador, former champion, looked all out of sorts on the Mont du Chat.
Fell off as well. Weird uphill.
That's right. Yeah.
Seemed to clip a rider's wheel. Should mention Mike had a terrible crash and came across the line looking.
Lionel just did. Like, you know, you should listen to Lionel.
You should listen. I just said.
I know, but you said he came in. Yeah, you said he came in. You did say he was in the Geraint Thomas crash.
Yeah.
Apologies.
Yeah,
but it looked. But what I'm adding to that, I'm adding detail. I'm adding detail. Layers of detail. He looked. I was also checking the overall classification as you were speaking. He looked terrible. I'd be very surprised if he starts the next stage.
Well, there is a rest day in which those who are injured can recover. Daniel Martin's one of those because, you know, although he got up, he limited his losses very well. He did have a bit of a scrape on his elbow and he hit his head. I mean, you know, the pictures that the Quickstep team have put up of his helmet, that's alarming. That is worrying. So he'll be checked over, I'm sure. The other people who had a really bad day, and I can't see this as anything other than a tactical blunder by Francis Dujour. Arnaud Démare has been ill for a number of days, of course won that stage in Vittel, held the green jersey briefly. Yesterday he was marshalled through by Mikel Delage and Ignatius Konovalovas. Today they added Jacopo Guarnieri to that as well, and all four of them finished outside the time limit. François. So Française des Jeux are down to five riders, really as a result of their own doing.
Yeah, it's a self-inflicted problem there, and the tactics were absolutely impossible to understand. Yesterday, there was a nice little sentence by Arnaud Demar saying, what they did for me, my guardian angels, he said, was not work, it was love. From time to time, love, you get carried away by love. Today was passion, and we know that passion does not always end well. And today it was just, we have a saying that, where sometimes the heart has reasons that reason doesn't understand. Today there was nothing reasonable about what's being done. A guy like Marc Madiot, the FDJ team manager, who is an experienced team manager, I really can't understand when it was obvious when Demar was about half an hour down with another climb to go, that he should have said, well, now let's stop it.
And sooner than that, surely. I mean, he was off the back within the first five kilometers of the stage.
Maybe in the first hour, there might have been hopes and everything. But to sacrifice, or you could leave two riders with him, and maybe only one in the end.
But Harry.
But the other thing is Michael Delage, who crashed in the beginning of the tour, who worked 2 days to help Demar. I mean, and we knew it was an hopeless attempt to do that. Well, Arnaud Demar is from Périgueux. He would have, after the rest...
Arnaud Demar, I thought he was from Beauvais.
No, Michael Delage, I mean. No, Michael, yeah.
Listeners, right. That is François' first mistake of the tour.
That's right. Michael Delage, who helped Arnaud Demar, he's from Périgueux, meaning that this guy could have been at home riding the tour between Périgueux and Bergerac in his home region, and because of this strange tactics, to say the least, he will watch... The tour ride in his
Don't worry, François. He's still going home. It's all fine. He can still go on the transfer.
Yeah, but he'll still be allowed on the plane.
Also, Yuri Sagan, who I witnessed come home all on his own yesterday, he came in just before a minute and a half or so before that FDJ group. So he clearly tried everything to stay in the tour, but was well outside the time limit. So now there are no Sagans in the tour.
Now, just before we end tonight, I provocatively tweeted "Je suis Fabio Aru" after the whole attack and him sitting up on the.
This is back. This is back to the news cycle of Twitter we were talking about a couple of days ago.
You get this. A lot of reaction. It was a tongue-in-cheek tweet, but I do mean it. But I'm being consistent here because at the Giro when we had Tom Dumoulin stop to answer Call of Nature, I argued that the riders should not have waited for him. The argument then was they didn't and should have. I think they actually did a little bit, but then carried on. My argument was the race is on. Something happened to him that was unfortunate. The timing was unfortunate, but it's a kind of incident that can happen, and they should certainly not have waited on that occasion. And I don't think at that particular point in the race they should have waited for Froome today.
Let's face it. Who was the day's winner? Who really made the best of the day? Chris Froome again. So I don't think I'll be tweeting just with Chris Froome in the near future.
On a wider point on this whole business of waiting and after you, sir. I really think it's going to start turning people off because
it's rubbish.
It
doesn't happen
rubbish.
In Formula One. I was sitting with Tom Carey, who used to cover Formula One, Telegraph cycling correspondent now. And, in Formula One, if there's a mechanical problem, the other drivers don't wait. It's part of the sport. And the machine is part of the sport here.
And just without being, I don't want to stray into controversial areas here. But the Chris Froome incident, they all slowed down when they realised something had happened. When Richie Porte went down, the race was fully on. They obviously knew there was no way I would have thought anyone would have thought, well, he's going to get up from that and race on. Where do you draw the line?
It's got out of hand. When you're following the race early in the stage, when the yellow jersey peels off to answer Call Nature, everybody else stops because the unwritten rule is nobody will attack the yellow jersey in that sort of situation. But that's at a moment in the race. It's like attacking through the feed zone, which also actually happens quite a lot. It's just an unwritten rule. You don't do it. It's bad etiquette. Yeah. But it's not.
I'd like to know who unwrote this rule.
Oh, please.
Well, they've had a a lot to answer for, especially on a day like today where, okay, we will take Chris Froome and Fabio Aru's Arsene Wenger moment where they didn't see the big incident and we'll have to watch it on the replay later before commenting. Convenient, actually, that Team Sky don't have a press conference tomorrow morning where he could be asked again about this.
They should send in Arsene Wenger. He would be politically correct on that.
Yeah. Exactly. I didn't see it. Well, you need some stronger glasses, Arsene or Chris or Fabio. But the point about this is that basically Fabio Aru, he attacked at a moment in the race when he was perfectly entitled to, and he could have just gone on.
I thought it was a great moment to attack when the yellow jersey's got a problem. I mean, when else are you supposed to attack? Come on, initiative. He should have got, I don't know, a combativity award or something today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, maybe actually I would have, if he had the combativity award, I think he should have been stripped of it, like Barguil was stripped of victory, and it should have been handed to Chris Froome because his combativity in the press conference was...
Or on the road, arguably. Anyway, should we leave it there, chaps, and reconvene in 2 days somewhere on the other side of France?
Well, yeah, but before we go, a little plug for Kilometre Zero. If you're if you find on Monday you're missing the cycling podcast so much, there are now, what is it, six episodes of Kilometre Zero.
So there'll be seven
another one
tomorrow,
out tomorrow, which is about some of the people who drive the team buses. We've got this big long transfer across almost the width of France to do, so we thought we'd talk to the people who spend July driving 5,000 or so kilometres, probably more.
Yep, and if after listening to that you want to listen to more, sign up as a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. Lots of stuff there. We're actually, as we go, recording a sort of road trip podcast where lots of after hours recording.
Oh my goodness.
I listened to some of that today. It didn't sound too bad in the cold light of day, actually, Lionel. Anyway, that's going to be released as a friend special, perhaps in two parts, with part one coming on the second rest day. There'll be lots of food, lots of little bit of wine, and lots of not very much talking about cycling, actually.
Not
but,
so much.
You know,
a little bit.
But quite a lot about reporting, about how the job of covering the Tour has changed over the 30-odd years that Francois has been covering it. But anyway, that'll come probably part one on the second rest day, part two just after the Tour finishes. For the moment, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard.